Welcome to the CMC podcast. This episode, we will be talking about what does independent anchoring of the feet actually mean when using the Arizona Vortex. So I know a lot of people I've run into, either working with or teaching, have asked, you know, what in fact does it mean when the manual says, you know, anchor all feet independently. So joining me this week, we've got Doug McElmurray, we've got Wayne Chapman, and John McKentley here to discuss what it means to actually anchor the feet of the Arizona Vortex independently as stated by the manual. So I've gotten this question a bunch, you know, because we normally see, a lot of times we see an Arizona Vortex just with three hobble straps when it's used as an easel A frame configuration. Is that appropriate? Anybody want to take it? I think it is. I've done it a million times.
I've done it a billion times.
Yeah, too.
So how do you do it so many times and it's not in accordance with the manual?
Well, to tell you the truth, you caught me when you said that the manual says you have to do it. I just thought it said it had to, you know, I'm pulling the manual out because, I'm like a lot of people, maybe I don't read them as well as I should. And sometimes they change on you, but I just thought it said you had to anchor the feet, and I didn't know about, well, independently. You know, I knew it was an option, but I didn't know it was a requirement.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on how you read it, right? So page 20 of the Rock Vortex manual, securing the feet.
Yep.
Right? One of the things it says is connect the legs together using independent hobbles between each pair of feet.
Yep.
That's
yep.
one of the four ways in which you can do this.
Yeah.
Up in the top part, it says the feet of the Vortex must be secured to control all forms of movement.
Yes. So I, you know, preparing for this podcast, I saw that too. And the Rock manual, as well as the CMC manual, which, I mean, they're both pretty similar, obviously. The Rock manual says the Vortex head and feet must be secured to resist all movement. So the CMC manual says that as well. Vortex head and feet must be secured to resist all movement. It also, let's see. So this one's from the Rock Exotica manual. Regardless of configuration, the feet of the Vortex must be secured to control all forms of movement. The securing methods and rigging must resist all tensile, compressive, and shear, sliding in parentheses, forces transferred to the feet by the legs in the frame. Feet must be placed on and or secured to a surface that will resist the forces being applied to it. The feet can be secured in numerous ways, including but not limited to, and you know, one of them is, in fact, hobble straps. So, I don't know. That's just interesting because...
Well, where does it say that they have to be independently secured that you started out with?
It says independently secured. I got to pull up the manual here.
I'm sorry. Yeah, because I'm flipping through it and I didn't see that. And like I said, I'll admit, I always read it to be the way steps 4A is, where you've got to secure the feet, but they gave you multiple options, you know.
Yeah.
Which page is that in the...
That's in page 20.
Page 20.
20 on the Rock manual.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha. Well, then
You know, I think the catch-all is above, right? The feet can be secured in numerous ways, including, but not limited to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but...
As long as you prevent that movement.
So does a hobble strap prevent sliding? Like, if you've got an easel A-frame on the edge of a building, do hobble straps prevent sliding away from the edge?
Obviously, if the resultant is correct. Yeah, I mean, I think we've all had it, you know, what I'll call it a settle.
Yeah, sure.
Or once you load it. But once it's loaded and settled, I haven't had it move. Obviously, if the resultant comes off, different story.
Sure. You know, just the resisting tensile and compressive forces. Like, obviously, with the hobbles, you're going to resist compressive forces. But right. It will not resist tensile forces. Like, they'll lift right up.
Right.
Yeah, but the purpose of the thing when you rig it is if it's rigged properly, it's self-supporting, and none of that should happen.
I don't disagree with that. There is a picture in the CMC manual. It talks about the easel A-frame, and I'm looking for it right now. Here we go. On page 26 of the the CMC Vortex manual, it shows specifically the easel leg tripod is a directional frame, you know, goes through some spiel. The use of hobbles alone is not enough to secure the frame in this configuration, as the frame will tend to move back when the load is applied. This example shows all feet bolted to the floor. So, like, this is specifically an easel A frame. You know, like, we use it all the time. And, like, the manual is clearly stating that it needs, they need to be bolted. The feet need to be bolted to the ground, as I'm reading it. And that's, like, that's weird to me because I've never done that before. So, I mean, I would if, you know, if I had some bolts and, you know, people were going to let me trash their floor every day.
Or their roof or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The point is not to have to do that.
I agree. So,
I think it too depends on the medium, right? The floor, right? If you're on a slick tile floor,
sure,
it's going to slide. If you're on something, yep. I mean, yeah, you are right that it does say that. It's page 27 on the rock manual for the listeners.
Sure,
it does say that. But I think, like I said earlier, once it's loaded and it finds its happy place, it's going to stay put.
Yeah,
right.
Yes, I agree with that. And I guess, you know, I've run into a couple of hardliners. Like, I've done it and I'm happy doing it, like just hobble straps. But I've run into some hardliners and I don't have a good justification to say, like, hey, you know, the hobble straps are just fine. Like, I know it through experience, but I look in the manual and the manual says, hey, easel A-frame, it specifically says the hobble straps are not enough. Like,
right.
And that, you know, I wonder, and I got this in my notes too. Is there some, I don't even know what the right word is, legalese to minimize liability, like particularly when training. Like I know when I train people, I'm not sure of, like, if you say, hey, bolt all the feet down and they don't bolt the feet down and the vortex flips, then you can say, oh, well, hey, goofball, you're supposed to bolt them down so they didn't move. But, you know, is that a, you know, I don't know if that's a liability minimization. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know the answer to that, Kelly, but it is good.
It's a good question, and it sure smells like that. But
yeah,
I can't tell you that for sure.
No, but I mean it's definitely a problem I've run into, and I just don't know. I just don't have a good answer for it. So
could this possibly be, though, where it shows the exam, it specifically says there on page 27 that this example shows all feet bolted to the floor. We also recommend that even if the resultants are going to be good, that you still tether the top with the cordelette, you know, that the 60-foot cordelette. And that obviously is going to help with some of the movement of that, and then the hobbles will kick in once it's loaded.
Yes, like
I remember the cordelette's a safety thing. It's not meant to be a guy.
No, that's just to keep a dog leash on your 64-pound mm-hmm. of aluminum from whacking somebody in the head below. But
exactly.
But what isn't that kind of the intent? And you have to secure this until it's loaded because the resultant should end up inside, at which, like Wayne said, it's not going to move once it's loaded. It's when the load comes off.
Assuming the resultant stays in place. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Agreed. Well, so I'll tell you, when I was first learning how to use, the Vortex, I thought it was okay. Like, everything was cool as long as the resultant was, you know, anywhere inside the footprint. Mm-hmm. And the resultant was like an inch in front of the back leg, you know, just the way we had it set up when we loaded it. And that thing like moved backwards a lot. And, you know, people around me, you know, immediately blamed the Vortex for, you know, like, this thing, it's as if it had a brain and didn't do exactly what we told it to do. But, you know, I had it move, and it was just a training thing. If it would have been bolted down, it certainly would not have moved. And, I suspect that maybe that's what's going on here. Because
again, it is an awful wide footprint, right? I mean, when you have the standard number of legs on a easel A-frame, that's a rather wide footprint. And obviously there's a lot of space in there to keep that resultant, quote, inside the hobble straps.
Sure,
but yeah. That's a big area.
It really is. It definitely is a big target. Again, maybe this podcast is short and not going to be that awesome. But I definitely took exception. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Wayne.
No, I was just going to say, if you can do it, that's great. But we know in reality that other than demonstration purposes, I know I have never bolted it down. And it has those little chain hooks on it where I know people that have done that in training where they have bolts and rocks and short pieces of chain and they hook them in the hook. And that's a satisfactory way of doing it. But in reality, many, many times you can't do that. If you can, great. Yeah. And the same thing is, maybe instead of a bolt and a chain, you're using a nub and a rock or a piece of personal protection or whatever to bolt the leg down. But if you're on the top of a building or doing an evolution in an elevator shaft and you've got a hard floor and no places to bolt to, it's not going to happen. And if the thing's set up right, it's supposed to be self-supporting. And the tether is on there, like you said. It's there as a leash just in case. But, it may be CYA stuff on there. I don't know. But nobody's using it otherwise, and the point is to not have to do all that crap.
That's totally agreed. One of the other points I had with it is, if hobble straps alone are not sufficient, why do they come with it? So, that's the my other point. So, interestingly though, I have messed around with Tapcon screws, like the blue masonry screws, for bolting feet. And man, you can get by with a little, chintzy 18-volt hammer drill, sinking those things in, and your vortex is not going anywhere on the, if you can bolt those front feet to a cornice of a building or something. So I have done that, but it's usually small enough people won't notice. But I wouldn't recommend it often, but it works well. I don't know the shear force on the Tapcons offhand, but I tested them real, dirt bag backyard test, and screwed them into some sandstone and some marble, because we deal with a lot of that where I work, and I couldn't break them either way. Two of them in each foot in the front, and I pulled on them. I pulled on two separate feet with a grip hoist, and I could not get them to move at 2,000 pounds or something, and I was satisfied with that number.
Oh, yeah.
So, tiny little Tapcons too, maybe quarter inch. I guess it's not too small, but anyways, something for the listeners to consider, I suppose.
Sounds like the key there may be color match caulk when you're done, so no one even knows that you did that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, caulk is your friend. So,
yeah, and of course, the rear leg on an easel leg setup is going to be more in tension than it even in shear, probably. So.
Yeah, definitely, depending on what length you have it, for sure. All right. Well, I guess that that's a short one, but I think that settles that.
I think as a follow up, what we need to do is go back to the to Rock and the people that write the instructions and say, what did you really mean here? Because there's a definite conflict between the practical application that people are using, the expectation that they should be able to use it. Sure. And things like that probably need to be resolved and looked into a little bit. And remember, the people that write the instructions aren't always the end users, or they're being overly careful, as we've already talked about.
Sure. Maybe rightfully so in a litigious world, because nobody is bolting it. So you obviously, if something happened, you would be able to, pretty easily point to that as a flaw. So, all right. Well, looks like we generated some homework for ourselves in talking to people and trying to figure out what the exact right answer is. So,
I kind of have a feeling that maybe from this we're going to trigger some questions, comments, and statements by our listeners when this finally airs, and we may be reviewing some things and doing a bit of a change up on the podcast and. Waiting for their cards and letters and then turning it around and commenting or having a follow-up on it or something.
I think that would be excellent. If anybody's got thoughts, questions, or concerns, I'm sure there's going to be a contact spot to contact us in the show notes. So send an email, send your thoughts, and we'll, gladly hash it out. We'll try and do it a first take, just read them cold and see what our initial thoughts are on that one. I'm not sure. I didn't figure this would be a long podcast, but I guess it's Maybe we've generated more questions than answers for ourselves.
I think, Kelly, where it gets into, too, is obviously we talked about the ESO, but when you get into a more advanced setups,
right? Yeah.
I mean, a common one you'll see is a sideways A-frame over a confined space.
Yeah, yeah.
And people insist on using the hobble strap, which then bisects the hole. And you're like, oh, yeah, you're, you know, and that's where you have to start getting creative, explaining to the end user, well, what way does a leg want to go?
Sure, yeah.
How can we prevent that from happening without bisecting our hole?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. You know,
sometimes it's really easy if the confined space has a collar on it. Other times it takes a little bit of work.
Sure, yeah. No, I imagine so. And like you, I mean, you just do the best you can in the space you're given, I guess. And you're right. Not every time can you bolt it to the floor. So.
And I think that's the most important part with these hobbles is for the end user to figure out, okay, where do these legs want to go?
Yeah.
And how do we stop that from happening with either independent hobbles or the other three ways that the manual lines out for the end user?
Two points on the hobbles. The old Vortexes that were sold used to come with a single strand of 8 mil to hobble the legs. Mm-hmm. And then we switched to the three independent hobbles. And I know it had something to do with, I thought it was the force being generated on the change of direction of the cordelette. Does anybody know anything about that?
I don't think it was so much that as if the fact that as one leg moved, it might put slack in and in affect the others because they were all connected together in a big triangle.
Okay.
Whereas the independent ones, if something happens to one hobble strap, it doesn't impact, you know, it obviously is going to impact that section of the triangle, but the other two are independent. And it's not going to impact them, as if I remember the situation.
Fair enough. That makes good sense. Next question with that, and I get this often, and I don't know why it matters, but I guess it does. What do those cam buckles on the hobbles slide at? Is that something for the engineers to answer, or do we know that? Does anybody know that number?
They know it, but I know I sure don't know it off the top of my head. And I remember going through that when those were put in. Yeah. Actually, before they were in the hobble straps, we were using them on the lightweight litter harness, and we went in through it there as well. And because it's the same buckle, but I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head.
All right, the follow up to that, and it's something I've been meaning to measure and just haven't done. What is an average rearward skidding force of a back leg of an easel A-frame? You know, could you put an enforcer load cell, facing forward and just load it, with that back leg anchored forward against a dynamometer and see what that is? Does anybody know if anybody's done that kind of testing?
I haven't heard of it, but boy, it would sure be subjective based on the surface friction and everything like that.
Totally. Like I would want to,
you could put it down on a piece of terrazzo floor and wax paper or something like that. And you could get a really high number. Whereas if you were, out in a wildland situation and you had a raptor foot that was into a crack or a hole or something like that, you wouldn't have any force at all.
No, you wouldn't. I want to measure it. Worst case, I'm going to put that foot on a skateboard and just like measure it there. Like it's as bad as it'll ever get. And just see what it is and contrast it with the cam buckle slip force.
I don't think it's going to be a big number, but it'd be real interesting to see what you'd find out.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. But when people ask what the cam buckles are rated at, their next logical question is, hey, how much force do they actually see? So it'd be interesting just to have it because I've wanted it. I don't know it, but that'd be an interesting one. Kind of an interesting sidestep to that. What do you guys think about? Maybe not the hobble straps, but webbing as side guys for like sideways A-frames. Anybody ever mess with that? Like just taking a ratchet strap and just, it's a, smaller footprint than an Aztec kit. Like I've messed with it. It works pretty darn well. But
yeah, I mean, you're used to secure loads. And
yeah, there's no reason why you couldn't do it at all.
I've been trying to track down a ratchet strap standard. I don't know if does anybody know of that? Does anybody we got NFPA standards for making rope and stuff. Like, is there the ratchet strap equivalent of NFPA?
So I don't know, because when you go to Home Depot and you can buy them, and you know, anything from securing a car to securing a trash can on the back of your pickup truck, right? It's just totally. There's so many different kinds.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest issue is probably because we've always used rope because we have it. And sure. There's no reason why we couldn't use webbing, except for the fact that most people aren't carrying webbing in lengths longer than about 20 feet. And by the time you tie some knots in it, that's really not very much of a sideways anchor.
No.
You know, whereas to take 100 or 150 or 200 or something, divide it in half and use it to anchor your sideways A is really easy. Now, if you're using a sideways A up against the leg, then it's probably, you know, one of those straps, if you can get one long enough, is probably not a big deal at all. And they're surely strong, but I'm sure there, if there is anything, it'd probably be somewhere in like a material handling or something like that standard.
Yeah.
But I'm sure not aware of it.
Nah, me neither. I had a friend checking in like the military, you know, with some load masters in the Air Force. Would have been good to have Leroy on here. He probably would have had that answer for us. He was a load master, I think, in the Air Force.
Yeah.
Merrick, cool. Well, again, more questions than answers about this. I think we'll have to do some back end follow up on, you know, clarifying the manuals, because they are, you know, a little nebulous.
Well, you know, we ought to talk about some of those things and maybe work on them for EIDRs for this next year. You know, now's the time to do some things. And I'm not saying it's a full scale testing program, but it would be interesting to do a few of those tests for little fillers and things like that. It's like, here, guys, this is what we did, and there's not a lot to make it. You know, you can't turn it into an hour presentation, I don't think, but it sure would be interesting for people that do ask those questions to have the testing and to know the answers. So,
yeah, absolutely. I bet I could turn it into an hour presentation if it saved me $350. You might.
I wasn't going to say that, but you know,
you might be bored.
It wouldn't be a terribly difficult test, right? You secure one end to a fixed object, you get an enforcer and a grip hoist or and any pulling device, and just see how tell when it slips, and then tie it off and see what happens. You know, throw a half hitch in and see what happens. It would be interesting. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm up
come
for
along
that.
Come along in a load cell. You know, I'll look around see if there's any that are marked with anything. That's the problem, is I think on those things, you see these ones with great big handles, you can put your whole hand in, and then some of them where you're just pulling them and latching them, kind of like on the hobble straps, and you know, some with little. I use them on my car to tie a litter down on to the roof rack.
Sure,
and they don't. You know, it's really thin single ply. It's nowhere near webbing that we normally use, but sure works for that. And it'd be interesting to see. You know, if you had, I don't know, it's back to there's a standard kind of hold down, but
right.
You know, like Wayne says, go to Home Depot or Lowe's or something and see what we can find. And
I mean, people load their canoes and kayaks on top of their cars all the time with them. And, you know, there's not too many canoes and kayaks flying off the roofs usually. But
not intentionally.
I think, too, if you're going to do that, though, you're going to probably want to, and they do test out fine, you're going to probably want to send them aside, keep them out of the UV. Yeah. Somebody's, you know, had stuff tied down to their rack for months.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is so UV degraded, as soon as you put a little bit of load on it, it'll snap.
That's for sure. No, I can definitely get down with that.
Well, you see the fire guys that have litters tied down to the brush truck or whatever on them, and then they say, oh, let's use this for our vortex guying. You're going to run into that problem.
Yeah.
Which
is why I mentioned it. Although I got to say, as soon as you said the EIDRs presentation, the first thing I thought of is Kelly's, the wheels are probably spinning here. There's got to be at least one or two additions to his machine shop to be able to make up the specific jigs needed to do this test. So
surely I can get a surface grinder out of this one. I got my big lathe. I'm sure I can get a surface grinder out of this
one. I'm thinking that, you know, in reality, it's an enforcer to an anchor and a come along on the other end. But
I mean, that's what I'm going to do. But somewhere in there, I need more stuff. But,
exactly. Never do a project you don't need to buy a tool for.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. The only other point, and I'll throw this one out there, we messed around with this at work the other day, and it didn't work great. But we made a sideways A-frame with basically with a big front. I don't even know what you call it. Footprint under the front foot. We just took a big piece of aluminum channel and ran it under the front foot. Like you anchored to the aluminum channel itself. Like you could drill the channel in. It had to do with making sideways A-frames on buildings. with, you know, junky anchors, but you could, you know, affix this aluminum rectangular channel to the building with tapcons, and then you put your front foot of a sideways A on it, and your side guys go to the outside, like outriggers, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
They go to the side of that. Man, like, there's a fair amount of flex, but once you get over the flex of that outrigger, it actually worked pretty good. Like, it was its own, awesome side guy frame. I don't know if anybody's messed with that, but we were definitely geeked out on it for a while, and then just, you know, kind of flit it off into other territory. But,
well, if you were worried about any sort of flexure or something, obviously you could design something other than a standard channel, or just get a deeper channel or something like that. I mean, that's just a matter. The biggest thing is it probably has to be long enough to get your good angle on your side guys. That would be the only issue, I think.
It was. We ended up just running a pretty short sideways A-frame to make favorable side guy angles for ourselves. But, it worked pretty neat. Maybe we can post pictures in the show notes. I don't know. I'll show you. It was just a neat way of bringing a sideways A-frame wherever the heck you wanted it. So, because I like sideways A-frames. My brain has an affinity towards them more than any other.
Oh, they're very forgiving. Forgiving.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And they're smashed down into the ground. Like they have difficulty going anywhere, which is good. Right. So,
what I'm curious is, though, what is the name going to be? The Appalachian what?
I don't know. There's a couple of things I've been struggling on. I want to shoehorn that Appalachian name in there, and I've been struggling to do it with a couple of them. Usually I got some smart-ass name, like, right off the break. And the
the Appalachian Sidewinder or something.
Exactly. I had Kickstand at one point. The danger with giving them silly names is if one of them sticks, it's just terrible because everybody calls it that. And then you were just goofing around. You were, you know, three drinks in when you came up with the name. Like, hey, we got to call it the whatever. And that's what people call it.
Is there some nickname you could use that's got fewer syllables than Appalachian?
No, I mean, that's just an A. I mean, I've got my Appalachian Simple System I'm trying to get out there. So, but I just got to make the mnemonic, clever. Yeah. But I don't have one for that yet. We'll have to think of that one. We'll come back with it next show. So,
it's a good idea though when you think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on the length, and there's no reason why you couldn't. You know, there's ways you could splice it together and do things like that, but. It's pretty much limited to the urban situation.
Yes.
Where you have that, you know, flat area where you don't want to place an anchor, or you don't have any anchors. Yep. Because it's kind of almost self-guying in some ways.
It is, yeah.
But then again, I don't know. I mean, you could make pieces and parts to do it, but.
Sure. A Triskelion leg, the new tripod leg. If you have a trashed one of those, expanding box beam would be an excellent outrigger anchor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's we had looked at some sort of expanding beam. Again, we messed with it with wood and some channel for a little while, and then we're like, shiny object over here, and just, you know, got on with the next project.
I've got some 3-inch aluminum channel in my garage, I'm not sure if that's long, it's long enough, but, you know.
Let's try it out. Like, put a couple eye bolts on the outside, and
I could do that.
Yeah, it was a neat experiment. It worked better than I thought, and especially if you anchor the back leg also to those, you know, same front eye bolts, two hobble straps from the back leg up to the side outrigger eye bolts or whatever you have sticking out. That it stabilized it like really, really bomber. It was pretty fun to mess with.
Well, now you're circling around your initial statement, because the thing that the outside, well, in that case, it's not really, it's set up as an A-frame.
Yeah.
So the front anchor is anchored it's anchored independently if you put it in the channel, but the back anchor is back to the hobbles, and it's back to the way we've always done it in some ways, where it's not attached to the structure or the natural condition at all, because it's self-supporting on its own.
Well, that one I did screw the outrigger, you know, just so it wouldn't slide back. And again, just little tap cons, but just to mess with it, just to see. But we didn't put a tremendous load on it, so interesting thought, I think. So if it's it would be a neat one to see out there. I don't know, maybe that is a another Eiter's, you know, hasty topic or something, you know, 15 minutes or something. Maybe I'll work on it when I get back to work, I suppose. Like I'm always looking for something to do.
One question, would there be a advantage to having an integral foot basically, you know, welded into that?
It'd look cool on Instagram.
Yeah. No, I don't know if that's I mean, instead of placing the foot in the channel, actually have a piece of tubing come up with the pinholes in.
Yeah,
it'd be even more stable.
Totally, yeah, absolutely. Because
then it couldn't slip, yeah.
But you'd lose some adjustability if you had to, if you put your socket in the center, you know, you've got to figure out a way to move it around. You were designing a product now, but.
Yeah. I mean, hey.
Well, that's what I was thinking about the channel I have is not wide enough for a Vortex foot to fit right in it right now. The Raptor would be fine, but the regular Vortex foot wouldn't fit in it. It's not wide enough.
Even if you turned it sideways?
Well.
Or with that bind, front leg's dang near vertical anyway. So, it's a neat project. Like I had fun doing it. So, I mean, if you do something with it, John, I'd be interested in seeing it. So,
You could pin it too if you're going to use channel. Do a flat foot, make it the same width, and pin it just like a whaler.
Yeah, sure.
For trench rescue, that would work.
Absolutely.
Then you'd have the ball joint in there.
I might have to. Borrow a whaler from one of the other guys at work. So just so you know, for trench stuff. So, cool. All right. Well, so what does independent anchoring of the feet actually mean when using an Arizona Vortex? It means hobble straps, apparently. So we'll, I think it can mean a bunch of stuff. And I don't know that we got to the bottom of it yet, but you know, if listeners have questions and, want to submit them to us, we would, you know, gladly take them and try and answer them. We'll try and do some work on the back end, and if we end up doing Eiter's presentations, we'll make everybody privy to that as well. So we'll, you know, what does back leg skid at? What do cam buckles slide at? And do outside outriggers actually work on a sideways A-frame? So anybody have any last thoughts they want to add, Doug?
Actually, I do have a quick question here for you.
Yeah,
one of the configurations we do sometimes is basically where that third leg heads over and basically T-bones into a beam or a column or something, and we lash that to it.
Sure, yeah.
So, but the million-dollar question is, what is the proper way to independently hobble those other, the 2 feet on the A-frame on the other side? Because obviously it's easy to connect them together.
You're talking like an easel A-frame in a confined space with just a really short back leg.
Well,
smashed into the vertical.
Back leg's 90 degrees to the vortex.
90 degrees to the vortex, exactly. So
it doesn't matter if it's 90 degrees or at an angle. If you're tying it to a column or some other structure, it's independently anchored.
I have done those.
Yeah.
And obviously you secure the leg. The one I did in particular was you secure the leg, the rear leg, if you will, the horizontal leg, by lashing it to the column, what we did. And then the what would be the front legs were just hobbled together because that particular space allowed us to do that. Now, you may say, I'll hobble them independently, but I think it goes back to, right, resist all movement. However you have to do that,
sure.
Look at the tendency of the motion and resist that tendency with back ties, hobbles, whatever you got to do.
And that's why I brought that specific example up, because should we be taking and hobbling that front A-frame back to the same column but at the base?
If it's a column and you can get away with it, I would go for that. That'd be the easy answer for that. Sometimes it's like a beam, though, like a low-hanging beam horizontal, and like you're not going to get those front legs to
right.
You might hobble them together, but they're not. There's nothing they can do. You know, you can't go back with them.
Yeah, again, I think it depends on what the, you know, exactly. If you can look at the movement and say, hey, this could happen, then fine, kind of resist that movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. All right, I mean, I guess one of the opening lines in the manual is, you know, you got to know what you're doing and know what forces you're applying, I guess, which is, you know, another catch-all. But, I mean, it really is critical with something like, an artificial high directional. So I think that's the ultimate answer is just, you know what you're doing and don't do anything dumb. But I mean, that's pretty, that's painting with a pretty broad brush, but I don't know if there's a better way to say it. So, Wayne, you got any last minute stuff you want to add on this one?
No, like I said, my big thing is look at what's going on, where those legs want to go, and resist that movement.
Yep, I agree with that. John, you?
It's a great tool, but you got to know what you're doing with it because you can do it wrong, as we've all said. Know what you're doing. Practice with it in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when it's time to use it on an incident is not the time to be figuring out physics. So, cool. Well, I mean, it was went a little longer than I had expected on this one. Generated some more questions and some more work for ourselves, I think, on the back end. But you know, hopefully, we answered some questions and at least you know, provided some insight for you, our listeners. But for Doug, Wayne, and John, thank you for listening, and we will catch you on the next one.
Thanks.